I was asked to come speak to you today, focusing on the impact of transgenics on soldiers. And I wanted to clarify, at least in my mind, whether you're a consultant or you're with Extension, I see us all as one and the same, essentially because our ultimate goal is the same, and that's to keep the family farm in business. So my comments today are for consultants, Extension, including myself. The other thing I want to mention, my focus is completely on weed management. So when I talk about the impact, I'm not talking about your impact on fertility recommendations or insects or anything like that. I'm focusing completely on weed management, and I want to make that clear so I don't upset too many people. So if you think about the impact of transgenics, and the transgenics we've been dealing with weed management is essentially Roundup Ready and Liberty Lean. We really want to go back until the Roundup Ready adoption age. I think as far as the weed management technology, nothing has been adopted to control weeds like the Roundup Ready technology. If you look at 1997, essentially when it was commercialized through 2001, we went from 0 to 67% of the cotton acreage was adopted to the Roundup Ready technology. And we all know there are many reasons for that, and one of them was that it was extremely easy. And I think I can pretty much say our value decreased significantly as the Roundup Ready technology was increased, at least to some degree, because it was so simple and it was so easy, and our recommendations were maybe far less valuable than they had been prior to the adoption of the Roundup Ready technology, which of course is one of the reasons our growers adopted that technology. Now, in 2000, the first confirmed case of glyphosate-resistant horseweed was made, and it was only into 2001 before really any of the cotton acreages started having to deal with this weed, and probably 2002 to 2003 before it was a significant issue. This is the first instance that those of us making weed management recommendations had to help our growers deal with a change that had been occurring. Now, I think if you talk to most weed scientists, the glyphosate-resistant horseweed isn't the greatest problem in the world, but it at least made us refocus that we needed to be timely, we needed to understand the pest, and our recommendations and the value of our recommendations at least were important to know that not only did we have to control the plant before we went into planting our cotton, we also had to understand the biology of the pest, in fact that you could control it before you plant it, but it could come up in the crop. And that was a challenge for us in glyphosate-resistant cotton, controlling the glyphosate-resistant horseweed. Again, I think most of us would argue this isn't the greatest challenge because Dr. Steckel talked about burn down and controlling horseweed, I'm sure, this morning. And many of the recommendations he makes are also valuable to control other pests like cut-leaf eating primrose or wild radish. So even though we regained some of our value, again, the Roundup Ready technology was being adopted very, very rapidly. By 2006, the Mid-South and the Southeast were at least 97% Roundup Ready. That shows how valuable the technology was. Texas and our western states were a little slower adopting, but still adopting very quickly relative to any other previous weed control tactic ever released. By 2009, even Texas and much of the West had come on board as far as adopting the Roundup Ready technology. So its value is clear on its adoption, but between 2006 and 2009, I think our value, or the impact of us on weed control, turned around, and it has turned around very aggressively, and in my opinion, the next 4 to 5 years, your value will be greater than it ever has been on weed control, and I'm going to share some of the reasons I think that is. Now, why have things changed? Clearly, it's resistance, herbicide resistance, with the focus mostly on glyphosate because we're clearly about 90-92% Roundup Ready across the country. All weeds are not created equal. Palma amaranth is leading the changes that are occurring in Roundup Ready technology and also changing our value as far as the impact that we're having. Some of you are still able to kill glyphosate-resistant, or able to kill Palma amaranth, but many of us are now dealing with glyphosate-resistant Palma amaranth where we no longer can simply go out and make recommendations of glyphosate alone. So in 2004, the first confirmed case of glyphosate-resistant Palma amaranth occurred in Georgia. By 2006, it was impacting 5 states. By 2009, I believe Dr. Steckel added these up, last week. It's 120 counties in 8 states, and I'm getting ready to add about another 10 to 15 counties in South Georgia. So it has spread, and it has spread very rapidly. So the impact of this pest and the impact of you have increased drastically. Now, as far as your impact, why is it increasing drastically? Well, first of all, we can no longer do what we did from, say, 1999 to 2004, and that's rely predominantly on glyphosate. Those days are ending for many of us, and they are ending very, very rapidly. And with multiple resistance, as we continue to want to grow Roundup Ready technology because of the outstanding germplasm, when you have multiple resistance, where you have resistance to glyphosate and ALS herbicide chemistry like staple, that many of us do, you no longer have a topical herbicide that you can control this pest in Roundup Ready cotton. That, my friends, is a challenge, and you have to be an outstanding manager if you think you're going to manage that and continue to grow Roundup Ready cotton. If you come into the state of Georgia with any other weed, tell me what the weed is, we'll come up with a herbicide program. You come to me with Palmer amaranth, I'm going to have about 12 questions for you because it is so challenging. Do you have irrigation? Oh, that's great because we got to activate these residual herbicides. Are you on dry land? Is that conventional dry land or is that conservation tillage dry land? Every program you have to handle differently because this pest is so challenging. And you may be the best farmer, the best consultant, or the best extension person on the planet. You go out and you spend $50 or $55 a acre on a herbicide program, and you still can't pick your cotton. These are the challenges that we're against. Now, my family farms, my dad's a farmer, my two best friends are farmers. And I love farmers, I think they're the greatest people in the world, but most farmers are not prepared for the impact that this pest is having and will have on many, many more acres, including my family and friends. We're going to have to develop integrated approaches that we have not dreamed of since at least the adoption of the Roundup Ready technology because it was so easy and simple. We'll have to develop these for the conservation tillage people because they are very dedicated to their cause. And we'll have to develop programs for the conventional people. But we will have significant challenges that many growers are not prepared to face and will need help in adjusting. And I'm not going to show a lot of data. Actually, this is the only data slide I'm going to show you. But here's my point. If you think you're going to go out in dry land production in the Southeast and probably Mid-South and Mid-Atlantic, and you're going to go in with 50-some dollars worth of herbicides, and unless you can make it rain because it's dry land, it's very likely you will not be successful against Palmer amaranth. You will lose. However, if we integrate in conventional programs where we deturn the land, burying a significant amount of the seed, we can reduce the amount of Palmer amaranth that emerges about 50%, we can greatly improve control. For you conservation tillage guys, we can also do it by using a rye cover crop to reduce Palmer amaranth emergence. The goal is if it doesn't come up, we don't have to kill it because we're not going into the killing battle. Where we implemented both deep turning and rye cover crop, first time since 2004, I've had better than 90% control of Palmer amaranth in a Roundup Ready program. These are the types of things that we don't want to do, but we're going to have to figure out how to do it. We're going to have to figure out how to do it economically. Here's just some examples so you can see for yourself. On the left is the herbicide program. Now, a meeting I gave last week, they said, well, golly, why am I putting that much out if I'm only getting that level of control for that herbicide? I can promise you, you wouldn't have made it 2 weeks without the herbicide. So we're not saying the herbicides are not critical, because they are. You will not survive without the herbicides, especially the residual herbicides in a Roundup Ready program. But the herbicides alone are not good enough. And that is something that we have not discussed at all, at least since 1997, for sure. If you look at where we added the exact same herbicide program, this has got deep tillage, this doesn't. We buried the seed, less came up, we had to kill less. Rye cover crop, same exact scenario, just about the exact same results. We're using an integrated approach to manage a pest that is whooping us. Deep tillage and rye cover crop, when you put them together, improve control significantly. Now, if you talk to me, or you talk to Dr. Steckel, I feel sure, or you talk to Dr. York, especially in dry land conservation tillage, we're going to tell you an Ignite-based program is probably more effective to control Palmer amaranth or glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth than a glyphosate program. It has to be, right, since glyphosate gives you no control. And here's just an example of a timely application. We, in some areas, are starting to move to an Ignite-based program. This is a completely new world. Many of our growers are not familiar with how to grow the cultivars, and they're certainly not familiar how to use an Ignite program in controlling Palmer amaranth. And again, your value increases significantly because of that. We know if you take Ignite out 2 to 3 inches, you're timely, you can get great control. If you let it get 3, 4, 5 inches sometimes, depending on the rate, you can have regrowth. So again, your growers have been used to killing pigweeds or other weeds as big as I am. Those days are gone, or gone for us who have glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth, and those of you who don't, give it time because you will deal with it shortly. So you and the increase in your value depends on the effort you're willing to give. When you have a pest like Palmer amaranth, you've got to understand the biology. We can't do what we've always done, just spraying herbicides. We've got to understand the strengths of this pest. For example, you got to know this weed will grow 2 inches per day. It'll get bigger than you do. Competition, it'll shut your cotton down, and you can't even pick it. Seed production, 500,000 seed per plant, which means within 3 years of it coming into your field, it will dominate the entire farm, and it's going to spread extremely rapidly. You don't know that. You can't convince your growers on how to manage this pest. So it really comes down to you and the value you want to have. At the same time, you've got to understand the weaknesses, and we're just now getting into understanding the weaknesses. For example, emergence depth. Why does breaking the land work? Because we can put it deeper than 2 inches. Palmer amaranth generally doesn't come up from a depth below that. How about seed life? We buried that seed down 2 inches at 18 months. Dr. Sosnowski's work is showing 50% of the seed are dying in 18 months. Maybe by 2.5 or 3 years, they'll all be dead. We can use that, but you got to know it. Light requirement for emergence. We can use these mulches and conservation tillage and reduce palm amaranth emergence as much as 80% or 90%, even in strip till. So the things that we don't want to do, but we're going to have to do. If we don't, or we're not willing to be very aggressive, I can promise you, come to the state of Georgia and we'll show you cotton being mowed down. Now, it's not just glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth, although Palmer amaranth is currently the one dominating the problems that we have, and it is a real situation. But glyphosate-resistant horseweed has now been confirmed in several areas, in cotton-producing areas. If you look at some of Dr. York's work, you can see where 96 ounces of Weathermax, definitely not back the ragweed, but it's certainly not providing adequate control. Some of Dr. Steckel's work, again, it shows you some of the things that we don't want to do or haven't been willing to do for many years can be quite effective as an Ignite-based program versus a glyphosate-type program. So if you have to switch, this is challenging as large as our growers are, and your value, in my opinion, is increased significantly. Glyphosate-resistant ryegrass and Johnson grass are now becoming more and more popular, and you'll hear more and more about it. Here's an example of a glyphosate-resistant ryegrass. This is a concern to me as a family farmer with conservation tillage. Yes, I can control it, but I may have to spray paraquat 2 or 3 times. That's not economical. So again, we have to understand the biology of the pest, and we have to develop programs that are economical, and growers are going to need your help. It can make a big difference, and your willingness to contribute is huge. Here's an example of my opinion of what a very good county agent made in my state in 2 years. Same field, same population of glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth, and the impact is real because of the commitment of that extension personnel. The challenges that we face the greatest, there's no doubt, been dealing with this since 2004. No one for at least 3 to 4 years in my state would accept the seriousness of the situation. If you don't have resistance, or you're a consultant who doesn't have resistance in your field, you're potentially the greatest value whatsoever. You keep it out. You don't have to spend $80 per acre to manage this pest with $30 of hand weeding. You have to overcome it won't happen to me. I don't know how you convince your growers of that. We hit them in the head and everything else, and it took a while. But you've got to be aggressive, and you need to prevent it. Now, one area that most growers are not going to think about at all, which you are extremely valuable, and we as extension specialists need your help greatly. When you fight pests like Palmer amaranth or some of these other pests that are clearly winning the battle against us, we're dependent on certain types of chemistry. For example, if you're dealing with Palmer amaranth, you know exactly what Valor and Reflex are. If you're in cotton, you can put Valor burn down, Reflex pre, Valor again at lay-by. Okay? That's great chemistry. It'll probably give you great weed control for a few years. You get resistance to the PPO chemistry in the state of Georgia where you have glyphosate and ALS resistance, you don't grow cotton anymore. Our growers aren't looking long-term. We have to look long-term, and we have to protect this technology and these chemistries. That is worth so much value that many growers don't understand. Most of us wouldn't think about it. Why would we worry about resistance to Ignite? I didn't think it was a problem whatsoever. 2 years ago, I had a grower that went in and sprayed Ignite 4 times to control palm amaranth. It blew my mind. We will get into the same boat. Again, consultants and agents explaining the importance of these technologies, because you know there's nothing new coming for many years. So your value in protecting what we have is also monumental. Now, I want to talk just a second, and then I'll be quiet. We talked about the Roundup Ready and the Ignite or Liberty Link type technology. We do have future technology on the way, and it'll be at least 2014, if not 2015. So the products we have now, you must protect, or we're in trouble. The dicamba on the 2,4-D resistance issue, especially on many of your broadleaf weeds, many of your problematic broadleaf weeds, including palm amaranth, will be quite beneficial. Here's an example. Ignite applied to 8-inch palm amaranth. This is what always happens to me. I get great browning in about a week. In 2 weeks, it comes back on me. You add a little 2,4-D in there, you greatly improve control. You put cotton in there, and we're in really good shape. Same situation with dicamba. We can make good systems. We can't. If you think the dicamba and the 2,4-D are just going to come in and solve the world, you're in for a big awakening. But in a systems approach, they're very effective. Now, this morning I asked you 3 questions, and I was just going to share the results, and then I'll be quiet. And it'll be real interesting if you get a chance to come tomorrow, because the weed scientist also answered these questions, and that'll be presented tomorrow in the main session. But basically, we asked you guys, were you comfortable making 2,4-D or dicamba in-crop weed control recommendations if that technology was out today? 16% of you said yes. 66% of you said no. 9% said you were comfortable with 2,4-D, and 10% said you were comfortable with dicamba. So what does that tell me? 66% of you said, no, we're not comfortable with this. All right, so if we're going to figure out how to use this technology that we desperately need for weed control, and we're going to help our growers manage it, who's going to do it? All right, you're going to do it. So your value and impact is going to be tremendous if we can make these technologies that we need work, because they are going to be a challenge, there's no doubt. As far as problems, I know everybody wanted to click all 3. I was just curious what was the most. Drift was number 1 with 48%, tank contamination was 38%, and then volatility, interesting enough, was the lowest number for 2,4-D. For dicamba, y'all were split pretty even with drift and tank contamination, 42 versus 41. And the third one, again, was volatility. And again, I'll show some results of what your weed scientists in your local state show tomorrow. With that, I thank you for your time, and have a great belt ride.
For the next section, we're going to have 2 speakers who probably need no introduction to this group. Roger Carter of Clayton, Louisiana is president of the Agricultural Management Services, farms about 1,200 acres of cotton, part owner in a gin, so he has plenty of spare time. Roger also has been a recipient of the Cotton Farming Magazine's recognition as Consultant of the Year and serves as chair of the steering committee for this conference. So at this time I'll turn it over to Roger.
Thank you, Don. First of all, I'd like to thank the council for giving consultants the opportunity to have input in a meeting such as this, and Bill Robertson especially for asking us to put together subject matter that we would like to hear rather than them just coming with a canned package. And also, the steering committee, the last true steering committee that I felt like I was in control of was the one that my dad would call together on Saturday mornings on the farm, and it involved small bulls. This one, I don't know if I ever felt like I was in control or not. I was more or less a follower of a lot of y'all that I had emailed. I tried to contact 2 or 3 consultants in each state and ask for inputs as to what you would like to hear, the questions you would like to see answered, and the format you would like to see at this meeting. And that's what we tried to put together. And I thank Bill and the council for allowing us to do that. I did, I guess because of my slow email at home, found out about an hour ago that I was on this program, even though I was chairman of the steering committee, and I said I don't know if I was in control or not. The other thing is that many of you know that several years ago, Mr. Ray Young said that he was asking how I was feeling. I said, Mr. Ray, I just don't feel real well. I said, you know, I've got a recessive tac gene. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But today is pretty crazy because my wife got me up at 2 o'clock to make sure that I brought her down here so some of y'all could see her. So it is afraid. If I offend any of y'all, please forgive me. If you feel like I need to offend you and I've passed you over, please raise your hand. I'll get to you. I think that most all of us can appreciate the comments that Dr. Culpepper and Dr. Leonard made. Dr. Leonard reaches really close to home because many of you, I don't know if you knew this or not, but he worked as an ag consultant through a lot of his years in schooling, and therefore he relates, I think, more to ag consultants than maybe some other entomologists that may have neither had that experience or walked through the field as a consultant. And that's the reason that many of us enjoy his comments, and they hit home. My perspective as a consultant on what he said and Dr. Culpepper said, I can only agree with all of it. It's all factual, it's all true. We've got issues out there that are going to be difficult to resolve, but there are issues that we have faced in the past and probably are maybe not quite as bad as they seem now. Down the road, we'll just think back that, well, that was easier than we thought it was to solve that problem. And there'll be something out there that will help us, but in the meantime, we've got an uphill battle that affects every one of us on a day-to-day basis. There's several points I made. Two things that have happened to affect my recommendations have been boll weevil eradication and BT cotton. It changed the way we had to scout cotton. Before, we crisscrossed fields and looked for all the weevil hot spots. But after that, with BT cotton and boll weevil eradication, we weren't as concerned about the weevil hot spots, but we had to be much more concerned about the small worms down in the canopy. So we had to spend, rather than walking the field and pulling squares, looking in a bloom, checking a terminal here, there, and yonder, it became a point of walking to a point in a field and spending 10 minutes in that spot, inspecting that plant from top to bottom to look in every nook and cranny to be able to find and record what we were seeing. And it took much more intense counts than we had to use several years ago. Training somebody to do that, for those of us who do use scouts, was, we just lost a lot of sleep trying to make that transition. It took quite a while until we got our confidence level up that we're doing the right thing. In the meantime, we were blessed, by the time BT, before he'd come out, to work in some small plots and field trials with Monsanto. And the very first year we put it in the field, we had worms come through it. And we pulled Monsanto to the field and showed them the worms. And just some of that abnormality or something, we were told. But when it happened the second year in a row, we were very concerned about it. We did overspray then and knew what we had to do. So the BT did not stop our insecticide applications. Also, about the time that the weevil eradication came along with the BT, we began to spray somewhat less, but the plant bug issue hit us, and then the stink bug issue hit us. And those of you who have to deal with stink bugs, you know how difficult they are to scout for. I'd rather look for anything than I had a stink bug infestation to try to judge exactly what is in that field and do I need to treat and when I need to treat. So the technology has caused some of those issues. Like I said, we're spending much more time scouting. We're also, even though we have now Bogard 2, we're still putting as much money in insecticide in those crops as we were before we had Bogard 2. We're spraying the same number of times for LEPs as we did before. We have noticed that we don't have the looper issue quite as bad, but we still have the other issues out there almost as bad. And so we can't just turn our heads and walk away. We're having to spend more time in the field. As far as Roundup Ready technology, it's both the best and the worst for us. I don't think we would be standing here today talking about Roundup resistance, glyphosate resistance, if it wasn't for the Roundup Ready crop. It made it so easy for a farmer to just go out there and spray nothing but Roundup, put it out every Monday at a pint to pint and a half and be done with it. Put it on a spray schedule, and it got abused. And consequently, we're now in a situation where we're having to play some resistance management type programs that we really don't want to have to do. And they're intense, and they're expensive, and they don't always work. So that technology, although it was good at the time, how long did it really help us out? 10 years that we could sleep good at night and not have to worry about the resistance issue? And now we're back into a battle. The other thing with the Flex, it only enhances the fact that we spray Roundup longer and more, and therefore make the resistance problem worse. I don't see any big advantage to that from a consultant standpoint, other than that we can be a little sloppy, is all it allows us to do. We initially, with Roundup Ready, we had reduced inputs because we could kill things with straight Roundup. And then we began to see more tea weeds come through, more sedge banging come through. We were adding staple to try to control that. Then we saw other weeds come through, and we began to put out pre-emerge because of resistance management. We're actually putting a lot more in a cotton crop now than we did before we had this Roundup Ready technology from a dollar standpoint on weed control. And the cost of technology is part of that. I was told that we're not supposed to talk about economic sustainability, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention it, because every one of us out there that has to make a decision on what you're going to do on the client's farm, you have to know down the road exactly how many dollars are you going to have to left to work with after he goes and spends $100 an acre for seed and technology with the one passive planter. Every one of you have been told, well, I only got X number of dollars left. We've got two applications, each side when you put them. And that's a lot of sleepless nights trying to decide when you put those two applications out. And we're not talking about $15 applications. We're talking about $5 applications. You know, half pound of Orthing or something like that, Joe. You know, just enough to get by. But when we put so much money in the front end of that crop that it leaves us little to come back with a little bit later on. Dr. Bradley happened to mention that, you know, we're putting this money in on the front, and we don't know till later on exactly how much good it is. And that's the truth. We really don't know. Goodness knows I'd hate to have to farm without and consult without the technology. I'm thankful that we do have it, and I hope it'll stick around a long time. I'm just worried about, are we reaching a point where we're paying more than we're getting out of it because of the resistance issues that we're seeing in the insects, but primarily in the weeds? And is there going to be some adjustment made there? I'm concerned also about how things are going to be charged out. What are my growers going to have to pay? Are they going to have to pay the same thing that Billy McCallhorn folks pay in North Carolina, or less, or those out in Texas, or wherever? We're concerned about that because it makes a difference in what we have to recommend to our clients. We have, I think, maybe too many choices about which way we can go in the future, variety-wise, technology-wise. It's going to make it much more difficult on us as consultants to make those decisions. And as we get older, we want things to be easier, and we hope we have two choices, and neither one of them would work, and neither one of them would be right, and they would be equal in cost and be cheap if we're asking for things. But we know that's not going to happen. But I think that with the new stuff that's coming down the road, and with some new products coming, that we can whip the challenge that we have in front of us, And as I said, I'm glad we have the technology, but I don't know if it saved me to sleep at night or not. Thank you.
And our next speaker is Bob Griffin of Jonesboro, Arkansas. Bob has been an independent crop consultant since 1987, former president of the Arkansas Consultants Association. He also was recognized as Cotton Farmer Magazine 1999 Consultant of the Year and has served last year, I believe it was, as chairman of the steering committee. We'll turn it over to you, Bob.
Today, y'all are going to see a different side of me than usual, talking all the time. I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Don't have much to say, but I'm going to take the two different technologies that Roger and Dr. Culpepper talked about, and I'll start out with the insects, with the Bogard technology that we have. I remember several years ago when we first saw the Bogard technology, I think it was back in the late 80s, we noticed that where we had these Bogard fields, we just really didn't have any worms at all. We thought that it was bulletproof. We were told it was bulletproof. It was enough. We'd never have any problems. We found out real quick during the next year or two that you could have some problems, but it was much better than what we had before. Was it worth what we had to pay for it? At that time, you know, the growers were very satisfied with the price that it cost. As we've gone through the years with the Bogard cotton, and actually sometimes we've had to spend more money on the Bogard technology than we did on the conventional technology, there were some people that thought that they were paying too much. With the Bogard 2 technology, from what I've seen so far, it seems like that right now it's back again like it was before, we're almost bulletproof. That's not the case. Everybody acknowledges that there is times that we could have to treat for bollworms, probably not budworms, but that could come in the future. But I look back to a couple of years ago when Dr. Gus Renz came out to some fields and looked with me. One of my farmers had decided that we had been growing Bogard cotton for 4 or 5 years, and it was so easy that there was a lot of talk going around that, you know, the bollworms really weren't a problem anymore, or the budworms. And one of my growers decided to plant some cotton that didn't have the Bogard technology. We ended up making about the same yield. We made around 1,300 pounds on the Bogard cotton and on the non-Bogard cotton. But I think Gus is in the room. We spent about $100 an acre on worm control. Yeah, we made the same yield, but we spent a lot more money than what the technology cost. Is the technology perfect? Nope. Is it worth what we pay? I believe it depends on each individual circumstance. And the way I look at it, whenever the farmer doesn't think that it's worth it anymore, he'll quit using the technology. But I know that I don't want to go back to having conventional cotton without Bogard in it. That's just the way I feel about it. As far as the weed control goes with Roundup, y'all mostly know Dr. Ken Smith. He had a spot on national TV a couple of months ago showing about pigweed resistance in Arkansas. Well, that spot was right in the middle of where I consult. So we do have resistant pigweeds. And just a couple of years ago, I really didn't realize myself how important this problem was. And this last year, I realized it, but I think this year, my farmers realize it. We had places where we actually tried to do everything right and still had problems controlling these pigweeds. For those of y'all that haven't seen the pigweed resistance, like Dr. Culpepper said, just wait. It's coming. There's no doubt about it. I didn't really realize it could get as bad as quick. I would say 2 to 3 years ago, we really didn't have a problem at all. This last year, we had places in the fields where we couldn't run a picker thumb because of the pigweeds. What are we doing about it? I'll just tell you briefly. The residual products are the most important. We're using something like Valor or Reflex before planting. We're coming in at planting and using Direx. Then we're going with Metolachlor and Roundup, you know, in between, and then Laybine with something like Reflex or Valor again. And even staying on top of the issue and doing everything you possibly can, you can still have problems. But is the technology worth it? Again, Roundup, the Flex cotton now, is it worth it? Try growing cotton, you know, without it. I still think that the small price that we pay, you know, it helps us out. I believe you have to compare. You get so used to using the technology, when you go back to without the technology, I think you see that many times it's worth it, not always, many times. That's really about all I have. I guess we're going to be open to questions now. I'd be glad to answer any questions anyone has.
You know, I'll have to say, I remember back when in 94, whenever the BP was first coming out, and Dr. Bradley and them had some work that they had put out right there before the BP even came out, talking about under high boll worm pressure, the damage to the bolls, and people like Tucker Miller down in Mississippi and some others said, well, that's boll worm. We can kill them. We can't kill budworm. And right before it came out, I think it was, what, 95, Tucker, that the hills of Mississippi, southern delta of Mississippi, and Alabama, I was sent out in a survey interviewing farmers who had paid over $200 per acre in insect control just for budworms, and this to stalk under because there was not a boll on the plant. And I mean many thousands of acres. Some tough times to see. One of the things that I want to mention to y'all too is with this resistance issues and things, and you've heard Dr. Bradley and some others talk about stewardship and our role in stewardship. And I want to just stress a point on in your mind that our role in stewardship of these products is going to influence a lot whether or not EPA and other regulatory agencies decide y'all can't do it, so we will. And that's really where it comes down to a lot whenever they start getting involved in a lot of this. With that, we will open up to questions. If you have some questions for any of the speakers on our panel, we will open it up at this point.
To Stanley, I noticed one of your pictures was in, I think, Macon County, Georgia, and you had your treatments there. I think the first treatment was Roundup and Parlay. Why did you not use staples for the ALF and just for
His question was in one of
His question was in one of my slides. I used Roundup Parlay instead of Roundup Stack and Post. At that Macon County location, I have multiple resistance where I have both products safe and ALF resistance. So I essentially wouldn't have gotten any control. So my only chance for success is actually to get the Parlay out before the TV comes up, which, as you can imagine, is quite a challenge.
Well, I think part of the issue is that we're going to have some tools available in the future that will be better for you. But part of the value of using transgenic traits is that you have an upfront cost. You know exactly what you're going to spend and pretty well what you're going to get out of it when you're using that trait. If we go back to producing non-basic diamonds, you're going to be subject to the environment, you're going to be subject to reactive sprays, and since we can't control the weather, what happens if we get a washout? It's really human. So it becomes a quite a bit more variable system, risk management becomes a little more difficult to deal with.
Those versions that our farmers never did believe in certain herbicides are not quite hospitable, but we know it's there and we've always taken the approach that best we can get off of that. I hate to put you on the spot, please, if anybody's not on the rest of the people's business. The only value I see around up in this place brings to me
is an insurance policy if I pass the fifth income. We're still using our legal for late nights, not round up. We use the NSMA, the capital, all the guy well. And is using our dual and reflex in as a part of stock. But, you know, we're going to pay a lot more money for the flex than we're paying now. But really, you know, maybe doors are probably worth $4,000 more if they weren't speaking out before the fifth lease days and had to wait till the sixth. You know, especially if we're losing 5-5, and everything is not about 5-5. If you agree with that, and you think flex is going to bring more additional size and push the room down the road, some doors are not going to do it.
Yeah, like I said, that's a great question. my response to you, and I encourage you to come tomorrow, because we'll have a really neat presentation, and we'll address that and put some economic numbers on that. But my answer to you is the same thing. If you call me last year, if you call me tomorrow, and tell you the program you're running 555, the exact same program you're running for. You need to either zoom your home child up front, you need to direct the spread late line, and I would encourage you. Well, your girl says, well, I might go to the fifth or sixth week. No, we need to be going to tier three week because we have to get this test when it's either small or preferably not up. So, in my opinion, the flex top does not bring anything to us in my state. It's got, you know, we got palmarines and sensors everywhere now that's resistant. So, I personally don't see the value in my state at that range for weed control. Now, I'm not discussing germplasm or anything like that. We can go if you call me, man. If you're not running a lay-by route in my state, run me down.
You know, and when I'm talking about waiting for the street, it's got rain down front. It's different way. It's probably quite kind of
right.
You know, we basically really couldn't run a whole lot of things.
Again, I agree with you completely. You've got to use those hot residual chemistry that lay-by. You can't do that over time. You know, if you go with flex, one of these guys could be successful. If you're spraying over the top of that over the top, what are you spraying? You spray glyphosate and you spray ALS resistant herbicide. That's all you have unless you spray a grass herbicide. So you control broadly weeds, you have glyphosate and ALS resistant herbicide. We have a massive problem with that. All that's going to do is promote more resistant areas that don't have it, and we simply won't harm them that way. So you've got to use residual herbicide that red lines don't have to be directed. And again, that extra wonder is great, but you know, we need to be moving earlier than that window, not later than that window.
Question over here.
Helpful is I don't finish you with the council or where it's the first to have doors out of
if you have meetings with a girl, it's got a dog, it's got a car, a video, somebody can use it, show it. You can see how it's bad and thin, how the movement of the tent is, that way, so it's really hard to talk to a girl to make them realize.
Hold on. www.cotton.org. There is a link. Send me an email and I'll send you the video. We put together this year with the help of Stanley, Ken Smith, and the weed scientist across the belt. We've got four different producers. The concept was to have producer talking to producer, to let these four different producers tell the story of how it happened on their farm, what an impact it's had. And we are working on a second DVD as well, trying to get more of the technical aspects that Stanley and them will be the ones featured on it. But there is a DVD available, and if you'll get in touch with me, if you don't have it, I'll get it to you.
Let me just add one thing. Also, we understand it took us 3 or 4 years to understand this movement. We know the modern pleasure world, traditional, and seed bank is what's critical now. And that's really what in the state of Georgia, if you come to see me, I talk in a 25-minute roll meeting, I talk about 2 minutes on herbicide now. Talk about seed bank, talk about development. So we would be glad to provide you any of that information that will help anybody. Absolutely. Anything that we can do, we've got for that.
Stanley, to what extent do you think combine and that kind of thing is constructed? One observation I made, it may not be inaccurate, but does the custom soybean free forest sort of came from the neighborhood and just absolutely inundated for every field production and came to my neighborhood in the fruit? And I was thinking 2 years later, I could try it. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think it's huge. And what you got to remember is Palmer amaranth seeds about the size of a sharpened pencil. All right, you got 450,000, in the state of Georgia, you got 450,000 seeds for female plants and dry. You know, we're talking about a million here. You get them all over that quicker. You shake it a little bit. You know, again, think about how many seeds could you be riding up. I mean, that would be interesting. We have time for them to take one and sit. I bet you blow your mind when you see the rest. And you got gin crash, you got the bush hog, you got the pollen, you got the seed movement. Where Steph has got someone who's talking in water movement, it's over the staff room.
You got one in the back of the room?
We were very hopeful. And we did a lot of work, but I think, you know, Colorado Flumetron 3 is a great material, but on palm amaranth, post-wise, it's not very good at all. In fact, the Palmer Dylon is far more effective than Flumetron. Really, in probably 4 or 5 studies in Georgia and 4 or 5 studies in North Carolina, it would really have to be an inch or smaller for that to pan out. The visual control is great, but our challenge is controlling what's up, and Flumetron really not bringing a lot to the table. Plus, Flumetron plus MSMA is a whole lot better than Flumetron, but we're saving MSMA for late line, thanks to input from these guys, and we wouldn't have it to work for folks like this, but we're going to lose that topical application, so we wouldn't even have the MSMA we need to do it. So, to answer your question, it's really not that effective. We need chemistry for what we need.
One more question, and then we'll call it. Okay.
Thank you.
Once again, I'll remind any of you that have not heard before that there is a DVD that if you would like that, you get to touch with us, and it's also, you can view it off the website. If you'd like to go to the website, www.cotton.org, and look at the weed resistance DVD, it focuses on four different states, and it's pretty much the ones who got it real bad, moderate, and just seeing it move in. So it's just very helpful. Thank all of you for your participation here, and let's one more time thank our panelists.